This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint and your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Some things are hard to accept. Let's rewind a bit and go back to World War I. And let's go to 1917 of World War I. And I realize everybody's not a World War I freak like I am. What does that mean, 1917? Here's what it means. It means the beginning of the war was 1914. Then there was the brutal Western Front slog of 1915. You had huge, huge battles through 15 and 16 of the Somme and Verdun, and battles we've done before on the show, and battles we'll do again. Don't worry if you missed them. We'll come back and revisit those another time. But here's the status on the ground. We now officially have a Russian Revolution. The communists are busy taking over there. France is almost completely broken. France is also in the middle of a mutiny, which we have to dwell on for just a moment. When I say completely broken, here's the deal. They are running out of money. They're running out of young men. The numbers on how on the percentage of young men from France who took place in World War I are staggering. You read them and you can't, your jaw just hits the ground. It was all of them. If you were a young dude, unless there was something wrong with you, you were going to fight. Maybe die, maybe come back with casualties. They had gone through horrible battles like Verdun, which was a French battle. And Russia had done something interesting. You see, as you and I are learning today, is the reason we always look back. The communists don't look around and see anything but unconquered lands. Communism was never going to be just for Russia. They thought to themselves, we could probably spread this out a little bit. And it got into the French army. And here's the thing about communism, and understand, it's sold differently to young softheads today in the American system, but it's still the same basic concept. You have been wronged. You have been wronged by people in charge. You put me in charge. I will hurt those people and take what they have and give it to you. That's how it's sold every single time. In Russia, where there were bread lines, women are starving, it's a disaster, it was not difficult to go and say, look at these wealthy czars in their palaces with their steak, and you're here starving in the bread lines. Elect me, fight with me on the communist side. I'll take what they have and give it to you, and we'll all be equal. Now, you can rip on that all you want, and so can I. You know, I'm the biggest anti-communist in the world. That's an appealing message when you're starving. That is an appealing message when you're starving and they're not starving. It is. It plays on the human mind. Now, it plays on the worst parts of human nature. I'm not defending it, but there's appeal there. There is appeal there. You watching your kids go hungry, they're 300 pounds because they're eating six meals a day, that message is appealing. In the French army, it was sold like this at the time. Understandably so. Remember, the World War I saga is a tale of a lot of things, but massive leadership failure and, I don't want to say disregard for loss of life because that's kind of unfair. At the same time, it's really fair. The generals, remember, going into this war, had never fought a war like this. There had never been a war like this in the history of mankind. Very rarely can you say there's never been something like this. Well, there had never been something like this. This huge, and there'd never been a war with this kind of technology before. Well, of course we're going to get on our horses and do a cavalry charge. That's what we've always done. Oh, really? Because two guys in a machine gun nest just took out your entire unit. The men and the horses are all now laying there dead or dying. You're asking generals to learn large-scale combat and small-unit tactics on the fly when weaponry had changed so much. Warfare. Sound the bugle, son. We're going in. Oh, really? Here's some mustard gas. Have fun clawing out your throat with your horse. That was World War I. And the generals in general, haha, how about that? What, Chris? It's called a play on words. Learn it. The generals in general want to do something when it comes to combat. And let's pause really briefly there for a moment. You obviously want initiative. You want somebody who wants to do something. You want that out of your armed forces. They were obsessed over it in the Marine Corps, much more so than even in the Army. Aggressive, move forward, always advancing, always. It doesn't matter if everything's perfect. You keep going, keep him on his heels, speed, aggressive, do something, do something. And every general wants to be thought of like Hannibal Barca, like Napoleon. Go forward, enemy on their heels, like Julius Caesar. You're the aggressive general. But pause there for a moment. You know, there's that great verse in the Bible, there's a time for everything. It's even in the Old Testament. Even Jewish producer Chris believes in it. There's a time for everything. Sometimes, yes, aggressive, move forward, go. Sometimes, it's best to just sit and wait. But the problem is, when it comes to combat, and we don't look at World War I and World War II this way, because we look back at them as these gigantic, bloody, but glorious struggles where the good man came out on top and the bad man lost. You know, that's how we look at these things. You don't look at the huge amount of politics involved and ambition involved. You're a new general or an established general. You're not a king. You're a French general, a big shot. You're not some god king. You are subject to the whims of the politicians over top of you. And you know what's very, very difficult to go tell a politician? You want to know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. And trying to be less white? Hang on.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
You make some promises to yourself when you're sitting beside a hospital bed with one of your loved ones laying there with tubes coming out of them, with heart problems. The truth is, heart problems run in my family. Blood pressure problems run in my family. I have to do certain things to take care of my heart. One of the things, in fact, the easiest thing I do to take care of my heart is eat two Super Beets Heart Chews every single day. They combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. That's right, all natural and outstanding for my heart, outstanding for my blood pressure, and they taste great. Go to getsuperbeets.com/Jesse. That's getsuperbeets.com/Jesse. Oh, and get this. If you go there and buy two bags, they give you a third for free. You can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC on Twitter. On Instagram, somehow I still haven't been kicked off of those two. Suspended several times. There are warnings, so it's coming, but I'm on Facebook too. Remember, I'm on Locals. I can't be kicked off of Locals. Don't worry about that. So you can find me on Locals. Most of my stuff I'll put on Locals will be free. They have a paid thing, and I am going to do videos for whoever pays, like little 2-minute long videos. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Trying to be less white? This Coca-Cola story is so insane. The whole world's gone crazy. Gosh. All right. Generals. You know what's really hard for a general to do? Politician calls a general in. Hey, general, what's the plan today? What are we doing? We're in a bit of a pickle here, in a bit of a world war. What are you going to do? Very, very, very difficult for a general to say, nothing. We're just going to wait. You see, we have advantages on supplies and things like that. We have advantages they don't have. Plus, we're just throwing away men's lives, and these men's lives are really important. We can win the war. I understand I have to do that. But really, the best thing we can do to win the war is just sit right here. They're going to run out of food and stuff before we do, and then we'll win. See, you're sitting here saying to yourself, well, yeah, that makes sense. Why can't you have that conversation? Generals don't have that conversation ever. Ever. What are you going to do? We'll do a big attack. We'll do an attack. I have a great idea. This will change everything. And it did. It kept losing lives for no reason at all. There was a gigantic French offensive called the Nouvelle Offensive. Robert Nouvelle was the new big cheese in the French army. Yeah, he got sacked pretty soon because the Nouvelle Offensive was once again throwing a bunch of brave Frenchmen against German dug in lines, and they're dying. And now you have a French mutiny. Now, the French mutiny was not everybody throwing down their rifles and going home. The French mutiny was a bunch of dudes that said, oh, I'm not going to leave the trench. I'm here. I'm not attacking anymore. That's the last time I'm ever doing that. And don't look down on these guys for that. These are some of the bravest dudes who've ever lived. and they've gone through everything. And at some point in time, you're tired of watching your buddies die for nothing. Nothing. The French army didn't even crack down too hard. Yes, they executed some people. They arrested some people. But the French army backed off and started giving them better food and better stuff. They realized, we have to do something different here. So, which brings us to a place called Ypres. There had already been two battles there. It starts with a Y. Don't bother looking it up. But I often wonder if this is the worst of the World War I battles. And there are so many terrible ones. But this one's called, or it's known as Passchendaele, or the Third Battle of Ypres. And here was the situation. It was flat, reclaimed marshlands. The British want to do an offensive of their own, just like the latest French offensive. They want to go after them. Why do the British want to do an offensive? Well, one, because of just what we talked about. You want to do something if you're a general. But two, Germany had really picked up its unrestricted submarine warfare game, and that was becoming a real problem for Britain. If you just to recap what that is exactly what it sounds like. We have submarines. We're Germany. We don't have a navy that can compete with Britain's on the surface of the water. Our subs aren't going to compete with British warships. What our subs can do, though, is sink every single vessel, merchant vessel, going into Britain. And there were many of them supplying Britain with the food and things like that. Its civilians and its army needed. Germany said, well, Britain's had a blockade on our country for a long time. Our people are now on turnip diets. I think we can go ahead and starve Britain too. And they were doing it, and it was extremely effective. Now, when things like that are happening, the British politicians are going to bring in the British generals and say, what are you going to do? And just like we talked about, you can't in that moment say, oh, nothing. I think they'll starve before we do. No, 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 no. That doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. They decide they're going to do an offensive. And they're going to do an offensive in a place the Germans have dug in like you can't even imagine. What do I mean by dug in? Well, how about nine layers? Nine layers of defense. The Germans had layers on top of layers, and the Germans are so, I mean, they're German. They're so good at this stuff anyway. They had layers with wallpaper and carpeting in it. Electricity. We're not talking about the trenches you're picturing in 1915 where you're laying in a muddy puddle with a rat peeing on your chest. This is nice. The Germans are fortifying everything with concrete. The Germans, here's how far the Germans go, and I've seen pictures and videos of these. You can still go see them online. The Germans, because they were aware of how horrible this war was and how much it was destroying the human psyche of all the men who fought it, they would build a mini village behind the front line that was supposed to be an exact replica of something the German troops would see at home. They would build a little shop where you could go in and drink wine and write letters. They would build a little home that looked like German homes with a fireplace and books in it. So you could, when it was your time to rotate out of the lines, you would get to, quote, go back home for a couple days. That's how intense the Germans were. The British, however, had a plan, and the plan was simply this. One, they were going to try to work around the weather and attack in August. Remember I said this is reclaimed marshlands? It's flat. The water table is absurdly high. And they knew. They studied 80 years of weather. 80 years of weather to figure out the rains aren't going to come till after August. Oh, they're going to come in after August, but not till after August, or maybe late August. Well, whoops, that turned out to be wrong. And they had another part of their plan. The British had, and this is, you know what? I'm going to do an entire show on this. I might do it this week. I should do an entire show on this. I just thought of this. The British had tunnels. When I say tunnels, I mean this. The 1915, before this, a couple years before this, Britain started recruiting miners into their army. To what purpose? They were going to dig down and then dig tunnels underneath the German lines. Tunnels where they could go down and listen. Tunnels where they could tunnel under the German lines and pile up explosives. They were digging tunnels underneath this Ypres area, Passchendaele area, for 2 years, stacking explosives. But the thing is, the Germans knew about these tunnels, and the Germans would dig counter tunnels. They would dig tunnels parallel to the British ones. They would dig tunnels above them, tunnels below them. They're listening to each other in the tunnels, and this is why I need to do a show on this. You know, I'm definitely doing one. There were times, several times, where they would break through into each other's tunnels in near pitch black, and sometimes the lanterns would go out and it would be pitch black, and have a bayonet fight or a knife fight with each other in the tunnels. I'm not making that up. Is that not the most horrific thing you've ever seen in your life? The PTSD from after that was, it was breaking to people. You can imagine, you don't walk away from that the same way. But Britain had a plan for these tunnels under Ypres. You know what that plan was? It's really cool. I'll tell you in a second. And trying to be less white.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Part-time job, full-time hustle, all-time Shiro to all of us. You nurture, we listen. You teach, we thrive. You lift our spirits, but we've got to lay down the truth. It's time for you, our Shiro, to stretch for the stars. Start saving more for retirement now, so you can feel prepared and live your life to the fullest. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org/Shiro.
A message brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. The French government taking shots at America's universities. Ouch. That hurts. A minor disaster at my house, too, after the Texas freeze. I'll go over that in a minute. All right. But first, let's try to wrap this thing up here. Passchendaele. The British had been digging this tunnel. And they get the idea for yet another massive offensive, throwing themselves against these German defensives that are just awesome. Absolutely awesome. This tunnel they had been digging, they had been stacking explosives under it. And I don't mean a stick of dynamite. I mean they had dug a tunnel underneath really a hilltop where the Germans were dug in. And they had been stacking tons and tons and tons and tons of explosives underneath it. And they set it off. How big was the explosion? Well, up to that point, actually, I think possibly still today, don't quote me on that. I think this still holds up today. It's the largest non-nuclear explosion in the history of mankind. They were supposed to have been able to feel it 200 miles away. They incinerated the hilltop. 10,000 Germans, 10,000 died instantly, vaporized. Chris is looking pictures of it right now. His mouth is just gone. I mean, how cool is that? 2 years to dig a trench filled up with explosives, they blow it off. And then they fire 4.2 million shells at the Germans, trying to finish blowing them off the line. Now, I want you to understand something about the Germans, too. It wasn't just unrestricted sub-warfare that had really gotten the other side angry, thinking they're fighting unfair, thinking they're doing German things. You know how the Germans, everybody knows World War I was famous for gas. The Germans would use gas, mustard gas and things like that. The Germans, part of the thing that gets Germans in trouble a lot throughout history is not just that they can be a bit brutal. It's that they're good at it. That's the problem. Remember, the real difference between Nazis and ISIS, the Nazis were better at it. ISIS is just as evil as Nazi Germany. By the grace of God, never got that kind of control, so couldn't spread that kind of mass carnage. The Germans were good at it. If you want to exterminate 6 million Jews, let's just say you're the Antichrist and you want to exterminate 6 million Jews, I really would like it if that's a dumb person who wants to exterminate 6 million Jews. What I don't want is an efficient German who comes up with a way to get it done really quickly. That's the problem. You want and I want our enemies stupid. That's what we want. We want our enemies dumb and incapable. The Germans, they weren't just gassing you. They had come up with something new and had recently used it. This was called Blue Cross gas. Doesn't sound bad, right? Blue Cross gas. Do you know what Blue Cross gas was? Well, you see, the other side, the French and the British, had obviously started issuing gas masks in response to German gassing. And if you're a German, you're going to look at that and think to yourself, well, that sucks. Maybe we should find a way to get the gas masks off of them. Blue Cross gas? The Germans would fire it at the British or French. It would cause such itching, supposedly you would want to peel your skin off. Guys would scratch themselves bloody. It would cause such itching and irritation that it would force guys to rip their gas masks off, at which point in time, when they witnessed enough of them doing it, then they would fire the mustard gas to kill them all. Like I said, ugly. Efficient, ugly, good at it. So that's the kind of anger we have built up in the Allies. But the British, they fire 4.2 million shells, and then they do the big charge, the big offensive, and it's initially so successful. You know, you get a day or two where they're pushing them back, but then it stalls, as it always stalls, because the German defenses are so dug in at Passchendaele. And I want you to understand what comes next. Yes, the rain comes next. But it was rain in a flat area that already had a high water table. The rains start to fall. They start to fall early. They start to fall heavy. And an entire area starts to, we're talking a 25-kilometer-long front, starts to drown in mud at one time. Everybody's drowning in mud. There were men who fought at Passchendaele, who had fought at the other major battles of World War I, and they said Passchendaele was worse than all of them. Because now, I want you to understand, 4.2 million artillery shells, what's that going to do to the ground? Craters in the ground. Craters now full of mud. Craters you can't see because the mud covers it up, so you're just walking along and you fall into the mud. We now have guns, entire artillery guns, sinking into the mud. We have horses. Remember how important horses were in World War I, and the men loved them. Horses, horse as a personality, like a dog. Horses sinking into the mud and drowning. You know that scene from Neverending Story where his horse is drowning? If you've never seen it, I guess it's a kid's show, but it can be a bit traumatic because I'm getting a little choked up as we speak. Oh, no, I'm not, but I'm serious. It's sad. horse is drowning in the mud. Men experienced that all across the battle. But wait, there's more. It had stalled. The rain came. What happens in battle? Men get shot. But men don't always die right away. In fact, the norm is they don't. You know, there's a reason there's always way more wounded than dead. But you're laying there. You're laying there waiting for medical attention, someone to come patch you up or pick you up and carry you out. Oftentimes, these injuries are so debilitating you can't get up and move on your own. Now, I want you to imagine running across the battlefield, maybe getting shot in the leg. You're going down there. It's not the end of the world. You can't move. Your leg is shattered. You're just going to wait until nightfall. That's when they would go out and retrieve the wounded most of the time to keep from getting shot. And as you lay there, unable to move, the mud starts to raise around you and starts to consume you. And eventually you drown in it. They drown in the mud all over this place. And the battle keeps going. And now you have horses drowning in the mud, men drowning in the mud. If you look at pictures of the battle, you'll see undoubtedly boards, platform boards set down everywhere. They had to set down boards and create paths across the mud. There's a famous story out there about one guy drowning in the mud over the course of 2 days. They couldn't get him out. They kept trying to pull him out, but you would go in yourself and the mud would suck you down. And finally, the guy starts begging. Only his head is out of the mud now. Imagine 2 days of slowly drowning in the mud, and eventually only his head's out, and he's begging his buddies to shoot him. That's a moment that never, ever, ever leaves you. Ever leaves you. That is what it was like. And now you have a sea of mud, a sea of craters, a sea of dead horses, a sea of dead men, in the rain and soaking mud, and it starts to stink. So many of the guys at Passchendaele talked about how bad it stunk, what the horrible odor was of all this dead, decaying horses and men. And you know, there's something really, really hard to accept as this battle stalls out and they lose a bunch more men unnecessarily. You know what the thing that's hard to accept is? It's for you and I too. I'll tell you in a second.
Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
There's something out there that's so hard to accept. 877-377-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Remember, you email me, I will read it. All your emails go to Jewish producer Chris. He prints them. I read them all. Your love, your hate, your death threats, your Ask Dr. Jesse questions. I actually have a few emails I'm going to get to on the air today. There was some heavy hitters out there, so I got to get those. We have Medal of Honor Monday today. We're going to get to that in about 10 minutes here. There's an absolute beast we're going to honor from Vietnam on Monday. What a stud this guy was. But you know what's so hard to accept? And I struggle with this a lot. So whenever I'm struggling with something, I assume you struggle with something. Here's what's so hard to accept about large-scale combat, political, World War I, whatever the case may be. It's really hard to just accept this is going to take a while. And there aren't going to be big victories that seal the deal. Right now, my email inbox is constantly full of people feeling like I'm feeling. Feeling like what we're facing culturally right now is insurmountable. It feels so big. There's so much wrong. It's such a disaster. The culture is completely gone. We don't have education system anymore. We don't have a media. We don't have Hollywood. The entire Democratic Party's gone. Half the Republican Party's gone. We don't even have sports. We don't have any. They took it all. And it feels overwhelming. Hold on. What we have, the battle before you and me, one, it's going to take a while. Two, you and I, no matter how old you are, you and I are never, ever, ever going to see final victory in this battle in our lifetimes. That's simply not the way it works. It's taken 100 years to get here. It's going to take at least that once we change direction to get back. So get that. We're never going to see final victory. So if you set that final victory thing aside, it makes things easier to understand. And lastly, little victories are good, but if we try for too many big ones, we can really, really, really hurt our overall cause in the end. Sometimes you've got to be the general that says, I don't think we should do anything today, sir. I think the plan should be hold fast and wait. Hold fast and wait. That needs to be the plan. But overall, we have to accept this is going to take a while. And that's so hard to accept because it is so important. And I'm not going to act like it's not. And it matters so much. The stakes are so high. And the country seems to be losing its mind all at once. I mean, all this culture war stuff. It's happened so fast. Now, don't get me wrong. It's been decades of small victories for them here and small victories for them there until they got in a place where now they can just institutionalize insanity. But don't lose heart. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. Just keep conquering the 2 inches in front of your face. Here's a headline. This is from the Federalist. Whistleblower. Coca-Cola uses anti-racist training that tells employees to try to be less white. Not making this up. This is real. The 49-minute training video by D'Angelo, the author of the book White Fragility, is titled Confronting Racism. Right away, the course establishes that all white people are born racist. Quote, "Nothing exempts any white person from forces of racism," says D'Angelo. "When you accept the reality of your socialization, you can begin to examine how you are shaped by it." Understand this. This is one of the largest companies in the world putting their employees through this. Continued, quote, "In the U.S. and other Western nations, white people are socialized to feel that they are inherently superior because they are white," she continues. "Research shows that by age 3 to 4, children understand that it is better to be white. Employees are told in the what you can do section to be less white, be less oppressive, be less arrogant, be less certain, be less defensive, be less arrogant, be more humble." They already had be less arrogant on there. "Be more humble, listen, believe, break with apathy, break with white solidarity." This is not in your kids' gender studies class at that crazy liberal university you sent them to. This is corporate America now. This is in your church. This is in your church. I got another one this weekend. Another one. Somebody walks right up to me talking about white privilege from the pulpit. Pastor talking about white privilege. You want to know what this really is? I'm going to lay it out for you exactly what this really is and why it's communism and why it's here. You ready? Hang on, I'm going to.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Gets you 10% off.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.